Welcome back to the Race Nuts podcast. Ash, mate, what's going on?
Plenty going on in the racing world, mate. Yeah, we've got supercars to cover. We've got F1 to cover. We've got, we're bringing back our stars of the past. Yep. We've finally got that segment coming back. And we've also got breaking news just today. Adrian Newey leaving Red Bull, which we will find out plenty more about at the end of the podcast. There might be some more news that comes back as that news is just broken this afternoon. So hopefully plenty to come from that. So we'll start at supercars racing in New Zealand at Taupo. Race 7, Cam got it on pole, which, you know, he needed.
A bit of robbery for Matt Payne, though. Did you manage to catch the top 10 shootout for Saturday?
Yeah, I did. It was, I believe from memory, it was degrading conditions throughout
It was just getting wetter and wetter. So
yeah,
poor Matt Payne, obviously Kiwi himself, put on provisional pole, which meant he was the last car to go out in pissing rain. Just had no hope, and start 10th because of that reason.
Yeah,
but I hope Cam liked being on pole position because it didn't last long.
he doesn't get a chance, Cam, to, like, just, I don't know. He needs to touch some wood to get rid of his bad luck or something. He walked under a ladder at one point and just fucked it all up. So, yeah.
A lot of people trying to for those that don't know, off the start, Tim Slade tried to put up the inside of Cam while Cam was having a fight for the lead with one of the rebels. I think it was Brock Feeney. Two on the one, and they were both in the wall. Slade was forced to retire. Cam managed to continue on for the rest of the race, but with pretty much a damaged car.
Limping it around.
I know Cam wasn't impressed. He made note that he thought it should have been a safety car start, being the wet conditions, but a lot of people disagree. And, you know, the typical thing comes around of, well, they weren't dangerous conditions. We're not talking Bathurst 22 here.
We're just talking dark cloud over the top, dropping rain, no huge spray or anything like that.
Apparently, it was just really misty rain that wasn't going away. It wasn't like you were getting rained on. It was just constant mist.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure from the broadcast, you could kind of see, it looked like Taupo was in, like, at the bottom of a bunch of mountains, I believe, and just like a big flat paddock kind of area.
Bit of a valley.
So, it would probably draw in a bit of weather like that. More often than not,
I think there's a gorge there or something that acts as the biggest Southern Hemisphere natural dam or something like all.
Well, so, that would make sense then.
Yeah. So with all that chaos at the start, that led to a safety car, which then led to another safety car after Brace Forward had a spin and couldn't get the car restarted. But that led to a good fight between Chas Mostert and Adrian Heingartner, which was looking to be an actual really good battle until the final pit stop at Walkinshaw, when the right rear tire was not on and just came straight off at turn 4. So
you just said it exited chat.
Oh yeah. Chas managed to limp it back, but obviously that dropped him from possibly fine for the lead to stiff shit on the last.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he's still beat Cam.
Kind of operation. Yeah. And Andre actually got up too, so...
Yeah, Andre Heingartner. In front of... Adrian Heingartner. I'm going to stuff this up. I remember someone yelling at me in the early days because I called him Adrian once by accident. No, he got up, which is special because of it's the number 8 BJR Commodore, Kiwi driver too. Which obviously that's a lot because that was Jason Richards' car. prior to his passing. So that brings us on to race 8.
Yep. With Matt Payne actually achieving pole this time around. And the Red Bulls... Yeah, no rain. The Red Bulls actually taking the lead, as they seem to be so good at in every category of racing that they touch. So I think that would be the win. And if I was to start a motorsport team, I'm getting Red Bull sponsorship one way or another, because whatever they touch just seems to turn to gold.
Yeah.
But I'm sure
I think just as a sponsor, not including their Formula One team, they just have a knack for finding the best team to be partnered with.
Yeah. And then like they don't limit the amount of cash they're sending, it almost seems like, or they just know how to sponsor a race team with certain people, get the right people in, kind of thing.
Yeah. So despite being on pole, the Red Bulls quickly get past Matt Payne, which really there's nothing really much more to note from this race. It was just a good generic race. Yeah, had a lot going on the back end. The Red Bulls were free to fight, which was nice for a few laps.
And that they did.
Yeah. after a few laps, though, Will Brown got past and was just gone to the sunset. And I messaged you saying, I think this is really cementing that it's Will Brown's year. And despite coming into Brock Fenny's team, it's now sort of, I wouldn't say it's his championship to lose, but it's like, if
he's running this hot, if he's running this hot, he is a championship, a recent champ. I think, didn't he win the TCR championship in
2019, first season?
I feel like 2019. Yeah, so he has recently tasted championship victory. So he knows how to put one together with the team and himself and what he needs to do to prepare.
It was so close last year, and I think it might have been at the Grand Prix where Rusty was making this point on the commentary of sometimes you need to have that near miss to want to keep fighting, like to bring out that hunger.
Yeah.
And you saw that with the example of Scott McLaughlin losing that title to Jamie Wincup at literally the last corner in 2017. Of how that just made him so
and
much
then
more
went on to dominate.
Yeah.
You couldn't stop Scotty after that. It was. Nah. Just knew what he wanted.
Some Roger Penske money didn't hurt either. But, that's pretty much a quick synopsis of Taupo. I really liked the track. It was very Winton. It gave me big Winton.
I can see that.
Before we move on, we'll bring up the Jason Richards Trophy, which was won by Anton De Pasquale just by a place. So that'd been, if Adrian Heingarten had just gone one spot further, he would have won that in the number 8 Camaro.
I think everyone would have gone wild if Andre got it.
Happened the first year they had it. The first year they had it, Jason Bright, he stepped into his car with his sponsor, I think won the inaugural trophy. So that's something I wanted to bring up as well, as a good change of direction for JR this year, for this weekend. And they weren't great at the 500. They were nowhere at the Grand Prix. But yeah, came in for a 2-3 behind Andre, and then Anton De Pasquale stepping up and just getting what he needed a little bit over him to win the Jason Richards Trophy. So good weekend for DJR. Maybe there's something that all those changes in the off season are starting to finally work.
Yeah, but just finally found some pace and all that. Yeah. It's good to see.
But we'll move on to a star of the past. Ash, do you want to remind everyone what this segment is for those who weren't here the last time we did this?
So stars of the past, I think we did it back in episode 2 or 3. Quite a while because I did a deep dive on Max Wilson, who we had randomly selected through literally just one of us mid-podcast just saying 2003, race 7, finish position 18 or whatever. So that's how we select our stars of the past. Someone who's a bit down there. If it happens to be a big name like Craig Lowndes or anything, we'll just kind of move on because, you know, no one's going to learn anything there. But we got to Jason Bargwana, and we know that Bargwana is a huge family and all that. And so Dan has chosen to deep dive Jason and just see what he has pulled up. I have no idea what he has found on this man because I think Dan listened to multiple podcasts with Jason in it.
I listened to both episodes of his chat with Noons from V8 Sleuth. And then I listened to a little bit of his chat with Greg Rust on Rusty's Garage. But that was mostly about his son, Ben. But we'll dive right into it. As a teenager, he worked hard and saved his money to buy a Formula V during the late 80s. He started racing at Bathurst in 1990, winning the 1600cc class in 92 with his cousin Scott. And this is when Bathurst used to be a multi-class system, so he won the class but not the overall race.
Oh, okay, yep. Still a class win is a win.
Yeah. So it takes nothing about it, but that's just like not to confuse people with an overall finish.
Outright win, yeah.
So that's all right. Money Dramas Limited stopped his racing for a few years until 1995. Finding money, he found some money and found a seat in Formula Ford. Despite having an older model of Formula Ford, he impressed the paddock in the way they ran his car with a tight budget. Driving against drivers such as Jason Bright and Mark Webber, despite missing three rounds, he managed to finish an equal ninth in the title. The following year, he backed it up with a second
place. Was that a big field?
That was a huge field. So
a lot of talent by the sounds of it.
Well, Mark Webber's in there, Jason Bright was in there, a few other supercar drivers.
Yeah.
And I think he finished equal ninth for four or five other drivers. So you can imagine what he could have done if he didn't have enough money to do the Perth rounds.
Get across the Nullarbor and all that.
Yeah, that's what he missed out on, the free Perth races, other than doing a free race setup. So,
okay.
I think I'm just doing this all to my head. So where was I? The following year, he backed up with second in the championship. In 1997, he ran the Australian Drivers' Championship in a Formula Holden, resulting in another second-place finish. At some point during all this, he joined the young Holden... Young Lion Racing Program, which was development program for Holden. Or HRT now, currently walking track. As a member of the Young Lion Racing Program, he was offered a seat in the 1000 for 97. While there was talks of him jumping in with Peter Brock, in the end, Mark Scaife jumped in
that
seat.
That would have been huge.
Yeah. In the end, Scaife jumped in that seat. To much drama, he took pole position on Friday qualifying. Bargs took it to pole on Friday. I think he dropped to 7th in the shootout. But it doesn't matter because he wrote the car off on Sunday morning warm-up.
that's rough. fuck that.
So, in 98, he scored a full-time gig with Gary Rogers Motorsport, winning two rounds with that team at Winton and at Gold Coast in 99. Most notably, winning a rain-soaked Bathurst 1000 in 2000, driving with Garth Tander and a VT Commodore, leading home in front of Paul Radishish and Jason Bright in the number 18 Dick Johnson Racing Falcon. Departing GRM after 5 years in 2003, he joined Mark Larkham's Ford squad, Larko. In 2006, the team merged with WPS Racing. The team folded on the eve of the 2008 season, leaving Jason without a drive He did manage to score a co-drive with Tony D'Alberto for Phillip Island 500 and the Bathurst 1000 that year, though.
Yep.
Between 2009 and 2012, he jumped between teams, including Tasman Motorsports, Kelly Racing, Brad Jones Racing, and not including his participation in the the New Zealand V8 Racing Series, but in the summer of 2011 and 2012. This is all before he was appointed the driving standard observer for the Supercars Championship in 2014.
Yep.
Departing that role in 2016. He was all set to jump into the rising TCR Australia series in 2020. That wasn't to be though, as it was put on hold during the COVID pandemic. But he did finally manage to race in 2021 alongside his son Ben, scoring a win at Phillip Island, which we would have been there in 2021.
Were we?
Yeah, I think that was the first year we went to Spencer.
Oh, yeah.
So it was the first racing back in Victoria.
I think it was.
So
we didn't even know what we were witnessing.
Oh, I knew the name, but I didn't know the significance.
We just knew cars go fast.
That's Iberia. So I think that's the end of his racing. I couldn't dig up anything more than that. So I think since then his efforts have just been all behind his son Ben, who runs the
His son and his family's wealth and all that.
Yeah, well they own Red Roosters. That's a business venture he does. He owns a couple of Red Roosters.
Oh, like franchise.
Owners. I want to say in Sydney-ish.
That brings the necessary question, Ben. Is Red Rooster just money laundering for organised crime? That's the question that everyone asks in this world.
I think that's been proven because I've gone to Red Rooster combined totals 6 times in my life. And if you're walking out Red Rooster with anything other than the cheesy nuggets, what are you doing? Well, you're going to get this massive, but no.
That is a good call. Have like really good food. They actually have really good food.
It's nice food.
They just aren't everywhere.
It just takes forever. And like I last night, one of their burgers, bacon burger. I was like, I feel like crap. Not because it's bad food, just because like it's such heavy. But I've never felt bad about eating some cheesy nuggets.
You're just weak.
Whoa. Keep talking, Hungry Jacks boy.
All right.
let's move on.
Please.
moving on from the Hungry Jacks chat. That's the career of Jason. Like a lot of these guys, could have been so much more if the stars had aligned a little bit more, or if he had some more money. Talking to the podcast, for sense of it, he just it was really worrisome for them for a couple of years of, as you imagine, like for him there was no career outside of motorsport, so it was getting a little bit worried of, would I have a drive this year? Would there be money coming in for the family and the kids and all that? So
yeah.
Nah, but the name lives on.
Really followed his passion through.
Yeah, and I feel like
it does, we'll and see. It's...
Go on.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I feel like it's a very strong name affiliated with motorsport now, and just it's very much present.
Yeah. I feel we're going to see Ben in a supercar shortly.
Yeah. Super 3 or Super 2? I reckon he'd be jumping to Super 2.
Yeah, Super 3 is basically dead. And
connections.
Yeah, Super 3 is basically dead.
There were maybe 5 or 6 cars last time, I think.
Yeah, but that was a good last year. This year's a bad year. There's 2, and they're both Nissan Altimos.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, it's done.
Yeah. No, Super 3 is dead, unfortunately. I'm just having a quick look through Google now, just to have a quick sus. That's qualifying.
Yeah.
No, this is just qualifying results. I want qualifying 1, qualifying 2.
Yeah.
Google, why the fuck would I only want qualifying results? That does not help me in the slightest.
Because you didn't write in race results.
No, I'm on the actual page. Oh, someone's... It's all right. These are the race results. Someone's mixed them up. Okay, so... we'll go the 2010 Phillip Island 500.
Yeah.
And because it's enduro, I'm going to point out the primary driver, not the co-driver.
Yeah. Just pick one, mate.
I am. Let's go. Yeah, 11th. car 34.
All right. All right, sounds good. Or, and what's the name? Do we have a name?
Sorry. Oh, sorry. I thought you were following along with me. My mistake.
I got mad lost in the world of Wiki.
Yeah, I told it's bad, isn't it? What did I say? 11th. So yeah, we'll go the Phillip Island 500. position 11th in car 34. Michael Caruso.
I've heard that name before, but that does not ring many bells.
Yeah, I know a little bit about him. I know he's a current co-driver with Frosty.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he did some TCR. Well,
sounds good. Next time we'll get a... Oh, yeah. I'll get a deep dive going on Michael Caruso for our next Stars of the Past. But that wraps up Stars of the Past. Now we're on to F1.
Formula One, the Chinese
Grand Prix. Huge week. Yeah, I was going to say, I actually forgot where they raced for half a second there. Thank God you came back for the clutch. I've seen lots of pictures about... time lapse of down the main street of China and how much the city has developed in the background. That has been floating around a lot.
Still empty grandstands.
I don't know. The cameras made it look full. I don't know if they just huddled everyone into one thing, but...
No, the main grandstand and the grandstand around the hairpins were full. There's still like these massive grandstands like at the outer end of the street and around the back of the track that every year they're always covered up in tarps. They really built it thinking that, like, all of China was going to come.
There, just right up. What's China's population?
I think it's 8 billion. No, that's the world.
No. All right, so I'm struggling to read this number. Just right. All right. It's 1.4 billion people. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Empty grandstands. Yeah. So there's a bit of controversy when. So obviously we haven't been there in 5 years.
Mm.
The Chinese authorities told Formula One probably, yep, we're done. You know, all the normal track resurfacing, fixing a couple of spots that were already starting to break a few years ago that definitely would never be fixed by now. Yep. And what they had done is painted the track.
Yeah, I was going to say, didn't they put some kind of asphalt paint or something, is that right?
They're claiming it's an asphalt sealer.
Yeah.
A few teams are saying it looks mighty like black paint. So...
Well, I mean, it sealed it. They're not wrong. They definitely sealed it and just said the water can sit on top. No drainage who.
on top of that, there was also dramas about a constant grass fire kept popping. I think it was the end of Q2. A sprint qualifying too, and then again in the... Oh, no, so it was in practice and in sprint qualifying too that this fire broke out. So the theory behind that was apparently this is all built on a swamp land, and the theory is that there must be methane or something coming up from the swamp underneath that keeps catching fire, apparently.
That's so odd. I imagine if you... I don't know if it'd be satellite... I don't even know how long that track's been around, to be honest.
2006 was its first race, off my memory. So it feels like a new race, but it's actually been there for a while.
Yeah, it's just, I know, kind of swept under the rug. But the Chinese fans looked like they were absolutely loving it. The ones that were there, as we made clear, the whole country wasn't there due to empty grandstands. But they looked bloody passionate. And I'm going to mess this up. Zhou Guanyu. Yeah, mate. Bloody, that was really good for the whole F1 fan base in China to have him there. And obviously they marketed him as they do with everyone's home race.
They put him at the Grand Prix, they put him up to the grid, like one of the top three, with his own little placard that said, Zhou Guanyu.
Yeah.
I was like, why?
It's, yeah.
But hey, you know, it gives much of a cake.
Why not?
It's like going to be the last time he's there. I'll be very surprised.
Well, no need to be a Debbie Downer.
Oh, no, no. It's
just
facts, mate. Hey, we've been copping it about Ricciardo for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
Time for some harsh truths to come back.
Yeah, it's going to be sad when he goes.
Yeah. Anyway,
also, the track was built April 2003, so we're actually up to the 21st anniversary of the track.
Yeah, but that was built, right. But when was... Yeah, I'm looking at that.
I just had it up. 2004. So, yeah, 1 year after it was built, they've hosted it.
Mm.
So, yeah, there's a bit of circuit knowledge that we... Yeah. A little nugget of information we now have.
So, all right. What happened there? this is the new sprint weekend format for Formula One, that the first time they used it, which is a practice.
Which confused the shit out of me.
Yeah. So it's practice Friday morning, sprint qualifying. Sprint qualifying Friday afternoon. Then Saturday morning, sprint race. Saturday afternoon, Grand Prix qualifying. And then Sunday, Grand Prix. So I think that's a lot better because it doesn't, like, the two don't intertwine, so it's not so much of a mindfuck.
Yeah. It was a mindfuck going from their old way they were doing it to how they're doing it now.
Yeah, but I prefer it this way. Instead of all this confusing about where does the sprint lead with the Grand Prix. But a bit going on, we had a wet sprint qualifying. Lando put onto pole after his lap got deleted, then reinstated for track limits. Lewis Hamilton second, Fernando Alonso third, which meant we started the grid with car 4, car 44, and car 14. Max Verstappen put it up in fourth. For the Aussies, Oscar in eighth, Ricciardo 14th ahead of Yuki. That's very important. That's good to see him kicking some goals against Yuki. Sprint race kicks off. Lando
I was just saying, DR needed that.
Yeah, he did. He needed a good weekend. He was having a good weekend all weekend here. But sprint race kicks off. Lando leads in turn one, and because he's allergic to winning a race, immediately bowls it wide and drops down to like fourth. Lewis leads until Max takes it off him at lap 9. Lap 16, Carlos Sainz and Fernando Alonso had a battle for third. Fernando ran into the side of Carlos. Carlos fought back, and then Sergio Perez got passed. Carlos would get past Alonso, followed by Charles Leclerc. Alonso then getting a puncher for contact with Carlos. So that's... I know I just said a lot of words, just go to YouTube. But it's hard to explain because it was like a real 4-1. But that led to the results.
Yeah, it was all happening.
Yeah. So that led to results of Max winning it by shitloads. Lewis pulling it up in second.
Didn't he just start walking?
Yeah. And Sergio pulling up in third. The Aussies, Oscar, slipped to come up. Where did he start again? 8. So he gained a position to P7. Yeah. Ricciardo up to P11, so not quite points, but still ahead of Yuki.
In the mix, yeah.
Yeah, that's what you want to see. Grand Prix qualifying, not a lot to talk about here. Max, pole position.
No.
Carlos had a mad spin come with the final corner and turn during Q2, but managed to get the car square and didn't damage it too much, so he was all sweet. Oscar P5, Ricciardo P12.
Once again, is that ahead of... No, he just got edged out, didn't he? Daniel Ricciardo?
No, I think he was ahead of... I'm pretty sure he was ahead of Yuki every... Let me have a battle with...
Bloody, every session?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was every session, so... that brings us on to the Grand Prix and the last decent timeline Grand Prix we're going to see here until Las Vegas, because everything else is now going to go back to typically 9 at night or bloody 6:30 in the morning on Mondays. So, typical race start, enough to crazy, Max leads and disappears in the sunset. Valtteri's car gives up and causes a safety car on lap 21. During lap 27, during the safety car restart, is when we saw Lance just doing Lance things, just doing prime work. Straight up the ass.
Loves it. Taking old Danny for a ride.
Yeah, because E4.
Why wouldn't you? I mean.
Yeah. Sometimes I think
Danny was seething.
Oh, yeah. We get into that in a minute, but yeah, he just went straight up the back of the car, wrecked the diffuser. Lance had to come in for a new wing. Ricciardo tried to limp it for a couple of laps, but then retired it because it was stuffed. Actually caused a little, because of this, a little bit of damage to Oscar in front of him, because he just tapped, he would have pulled up before hitting Oscar, and then Lance changed that. So Oscar had a bit of a compromised race from that point onwards too. But,
silly. Very silly.
While this is all going on, Yuki tangles with Kevin Magnussen, which rips the tire off the rim and causes him to retire as well. So that's a double DNF for AlphaTauri. No. RB. That's what they're called now. But, yeah.
Do you want to take us... RB, Visa Cash App Operation.
V-carb. Do you want to take us through the back and forth between Ricciardo and Stroll?
So a lot of it happened in the media pen, as far as I could tell. I didn't capture every little bit, but, you know, Stroll felt brake checked, I'm pretty sure, but everyone was braking. They were coming into the final corner right before the restart. And Stroll just absolutely deleted Danny's diffuser, which is a huge aerodynamic part on these cars. So that hence why he got out. And just mid-interview, Daniel Ricciardo in the media pen, mid-interview, the journalist, I'm not too sure who the journalist was, but they just said to Danny, yes, Stroll reckons it was your fault for basically brake checking. So Danny's face instantly just went even more serious, and you know, he was probably gonna let it fly a little bit beforehand, but when the interviewer had said that, you know, Dan said he was pissed, and
he was,
you know, he really held back. All the media training he has ever had came to that one moment.
He's, I think that's at this point,
the best way to sum it up.
His exact words were, I was calm, I'd calmed down, but now you just told me that I'm pissed off again. Which, in the world of boxing royals, we just saw the Alpha Blokes boxing royal last weekend as well. Can we get a Formula One going? That should be like an end of every season. There should be a Formula One boxing match where Ricciardo can just delete Stroll for that comment in the ring.
Isn't there like a old tradition or something where you, I don't know, give someone a certain thing and it's like a way of saying, I want to fight you, we have a problem, and they just sort it out either by like punching on or whatever, and it's like a marker almost, like you're given a marker. Or, I don't know if that was an actual
apparently
thing.
Apparently,
that's just like the world of John Wick or something.
Well, the only thing I know about that is, like, I know if you go into an old school pub and put a glass upside down the bar, you'll just challenge anyone to a fight. Don't know if that's bullshit or not, but I'm not willing to find
out. We'll find out. No, I'm going to find out. That's it. I'm going into an old school bar and throwing five glasses upside down for shits and gigs.
Having a biff down at the Birdsville Hotel. So that, yeah.
Biff.
Yeah, mate. Biffing down the flats.
Yeah. All right. So.
So we'll move on to top three. You know, take a wild step of winning that. It's Max Verstappen. Pretty standard stuff. I just presume that Max is going to win everything here. We'll let you know when he doesn't. Second out of nowhere, Lando.
Yeah. Yeah, he decided he'd have a good race.
Yeah. Apparently he pulled up. Actually, he missed. His engineer didn't tell me how to go to the grid, so he pulled up into the pit line and said the thing, and then I think someone was saying he took the glass of water from the third place position. I don't know, from the first place position, and then he took... when he got onto the podium, he actually stood in the third place. So imagine doing something on the line of doing everything other than second. Still can't win a race.
Yeah, he didn't. He will soon, surely. Yeah, sure. I mean, we get another Max DNF like Australia, then we might be talking race win for him.
All I want over the next couple of years until McLaren is competitive is I want Oscar to claim a win before he does. Because then I'll be running around the room like blokes on Skylab, because it'll just be the funniest thing ever. Speaking of Oscar. Well, actually, not speaking of Oscar. Sergio pulled up third. Oscar, I think he fell to P8. I didn't write down.
Yeah.
He ended up in P8.
That's all right.
Fifth. Yeah, so he started fifth.
Points for the team. P8.
Yeah, so points are good. Ricardo, obviously, DNF. So, but besides that, we saw a lot of good little battles. I haven't written any of them down, but rewatching the highlights a few hours ago, I was like, oh, yeah, that happened. We had a lot of nice little battles, and that hairpin coming off the straight is always, it's always a good opportunity there.
Yeah, it opens up for such a dive, and you can close it off by the last corner too, having it go the opposite way. It doesn't keep the options open for whoever you've just dived on.
Yeah.
That covers the...
I was going to say in 2019, back when 2018, sorry, back when Max was Max crashed Tappen, and everyone used to joke he crashed all the time because obviously he did. He just dive bombed.
It was young and dumb.
Yeah, he just dive bombed Sebastian Vettel there, and took them both out. Like they finished the race, but like took them out.
Okay.
But no, that takes us out of China. Yeah.
Yep. And into the news of Brody joining Todd Hazelwood with TA2,
THF Racing. Is that right? I think they're going to do both TA2 and the Trans-Am Speed Series, as we're probably that they run the same the same regulations, so that's why you see so many cars jumping between those two categories. I think there is a lot of talk about them finally joining up and just becoming one big series, but
emerge.
We'll wait and see. Yeah, Rose is joining them to get an extra lap times. I think Todd might be jumping in. I know Todd's going to jump in with LeBrock, so it's good to see him. We can get him. Todd's still around the team. Getting involved. Bathurst ahead of the 1000 is getting a complete resurface at the cost of, I think I saw the price tag of $10.5 million, which sounds about right for a
six kilometers of racetrack.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then over pit lane too, more than likely, because you're not going to have a new track and an old pit lane kind of thing. You know, you want it all to look flash and nice.
Yeah, I think it's been...
Let alone what else they might do with the resurface.
Yeah, I think the last time they did this was in 2004 when they built the new pit building. I think they just did a big overhaul, so...
If... Yeah.
Which it makes that, 20 years.
Brings down the tyre deg, though. We might see a lot better racing there, actually.
I think it will bring it up.
By resurfacing, if it's not...
Well, but yeah, bring it down.
That's... I reckon it would bring it down, a smoother surface on the tyres.
I used to think this too, and then I was watching... Yeah, I used to think this too, but then I was listening to one of the Dunlop guys giving it, like, at... the 500 last year, he brought out one of the tyres. He was just talking to a bunch of people out the back of the garage. And he was explaining...
Yeah.
That, so this is just for Lease Supercars. I presume it's generic across the whole industry of... Actually, you want it to be a rougher track because then the tyre grips. Because, well, yeah, a rougher track could rip the tyre.
Okay.
It won't have as much spin.
Yeah.
So it's not rubbing as much, therefore... it grips up and it won't be like shredding the tire by spinning on the surface, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So.
That does make sense.
Yeah, if it makes it smoother, then it's going to be worse tire deck. But they're going back to the hard compound this year, not the soft like last year.
Yeah. Yeah, that was not the greatest going to the soft because there were just huge marbles off to the side. No one could go off the line.
Yeah, and hopefully we will be there.
Yeah. We'll be there. We're there.
Yeah. We'll skip past Adrian Newey. We'll finish on that. Another domino has fallen in the silly season for Formula One. Nico Hülkenberg will be going to Audi next year.
Yeah, he's all lined up to go.
Yeah, he's got a multi-year deal. I think it's for two plus one.
I wonder who he'll be with. Yeah,
the rumblings is...
I'm curious to see who he will be with.
Yeah, the rumblings are he's going to be with... They're looking to get Carlos. Because this is Audi...
Yep.
So they're going to be Sauber next year, but Audi is building the team for... To become a full work squad in 26. So, apparently Audi want a full new slate. They want full new drivers for this. But the go is, from what I've been reading, is they want Carlos. They're talking to a couple of people, but Carlos is the first person they want because they want someone that's good but has longevity, obviously. But the sounds of it,
yeah,
if they can't get any of the other people they want, including Carlos, they will leave Valtteri in for another year until they can.
Yep.
And then, obviously, like I said, Ones and Joe is probably the one that's going. Even though you could argue, Ones and Joe and Valtteri about the same level. They're not looking for a real spot. They're looking for experienced, well hands that can sort of form this team in the first couple of years before they start trying to run with it.
Bring the car home.
Yeah. And Valtteri's a good...
That makes sense.
A good, safe pair of hands as well, as he comes with all that experience from Mercedes. That and a lot.
Yeah.
Nice bloke.
You know, he's a race winner and everything.
Yeah, so...
And very marketable too, so sponsorship money will help.
Especially in Australia, but if Valtteri does lose a seat, I'm really trying to see where he goes. Maybe the Williams, I doubt it. I guess if a push comes to shove, if it's Williams enough, I guess he'll go, but maybe Alpine, because I think both those drivers want out. I don't think he's ready to retire yet.
Yeah.
Ones in Joe, I don't know either. Maybe Williams with his big bag of cash, but I think, I don't know, he might start something. I've had a good couple, I don't know, he even got to the point of like a Latifi where people were saying good there, but he's not showing enough that he should be there. And that's all where like Latifi and Stroll, like where Stroll is at now, where people are saying, well, what are you doing? Like, yeah, okay, you're not really doing anything every race, and then once every few races, you fuck up. Yeah, so get out of the way. You got so many other drivers in the wings. So I think Ones and Joe's gone. Sargent's definitely gone.
Yeah, is
Valtteri, it all depends if there's a seat somewhere.
He might just hang it up and go do triathlons or something too.
Hopefully supercars can do more supercars. Who knows? We'll end this episode with the biggest, latest news, which is car designer Adrian Newey is going to leave Red Bull at the beginning, or the end of the 2024 season, but calendar-wise at the beginning of 2025.
Yeah.
So, I think it was capping off 19 years.
And, man, 19, damn close to 20 years.
With Red Bull. Is
designed that many race-winning cars with Red Bull. It was with Williams beforehand. He's designed Indy 500 race winners too. Is the best there is in this generation. Big shake-up. There'll be huge dominoes that fall because of it.
I don't know.
I'm excited to see what comes of it.
I think it was Autosports, one of their guys, is making the case of maybe this would just allow the people behind him that he's been sort of training and mentoring over the last few years to finally shine. So we'll wait and see, but I think there's definitely a domino falling in terms of whatever the drama's happening at Red Bull between, because apparently there's a huge internal civil war between Verstappen's people, more Jos Verstappen's people, and Helmut Marko, and between them and Christian Horner's people and all his supporters within the team. Obviously, the name who's... I've forgotten his name, and I'm going to butcher it anyway. The owner of Red Bull, the company, passed away last year around the US Grand Prix. Mm. So there's been a lot of chat around, well, the guy who owned the team that was a race fanatic, he's gone. The team's doing well now, obviously. It's winning multiple titles back to back to back. But what happens when it goes back into another slump
like
it did from 2014 through the 2020? You know, will they keep pumping money into it, or will they just say, well, Dimitri's gone. Not Dimitri. I can't remember his bloke's name. Oh, mate's gone. Do we keep pumping money into this? Because it seemed like, from what I heard, he was willing to let the team crumble for his willingness to help the Formula One team, which worked out well because the team was always doing well.
Yeah. It's huge.
I think before we wrap this up, we are recording... I think
that should...
We're recording this on the 1st of May. Now, we're not going to get into it too much because we're going to do its own separate thing in a couple of days' time, but today does mark the 30th anniversary of the passing of Roland Ratzenberger and Ayrton Senna at Imola during the Grand Prix 1994.
Yeah.
So, like I said, we're going to do a deep dive. Sport,
especially Senna, but yeah.
Yeah, and Roland had his own things, but we'll get into a big deep dive about that in a couple of days' time. Any closing out thoughts before we leave, Ash?
No, not really. Just excited for all the racing coming up.
Yeah, well, Miami.
Excited to get around it. Yeah, that's all I've got.
Yeah, I think Miami
should be fake water or real water.
I think it's fake or real. They're leaving it fake because it's funnier. Which I 100% agree. Yeah,
and we'll find out on the broadcast.
The sprint race is at 3 a.m. Melbourne time Sunday, and then the Grand Prix 6 a.m.
Yep.
Melbourne time Monday.
Okay, that's not the worst, not the greatest, but we'll make
it's the worst if you want to watch the Grand Prix.
I think that's
right, we'll call it there.
I think that wraps it all up then for this episode.
Yeah, we'll see you all next week.
Thanks for listening if you got this far. Yeah,
right. Bye. See you, mate.